Yesterday, we were all, both services, morning and evening, we were in the Old Testament in the book of Psalms. Today, we will be in the New Testament in the book of James. A truth that I think we find for sure in the book of James, I think we find it throughout all of Scripture, it's really that our life is nonstop testing, nonstop tests. Did you know that we have tests all day, every day? And I think from the time you get up in the morning to the time you go to bed at night, all throughout your life, there's no telling how many tests you had today. There's no telling how many tests you have lined up for you tomorrow. Now, here's the thing. I think a lot of times we see some things as tests. We see hard things as tests, but everything's a test. Like maybe we would understand the test of maybe loneliness. But did you know that it's a test to have people around you too? It's a test to have no children. It's a test to have children. It's a test to have a lot of children. We would understand the test perhaps of poor health. But have you ever seen good health as a test? I mean, like maybe tonight you have, as far as you know from the doctor, I mean, you have good health as far as you know. But maybe you're failing the test of good health. You're actually in the midst of the kind gift, but yet at the same time, the test of good health, and you're spending your health on yourself, your kingdom instead of His kingdom. All of life is a test. We would understand the test of no money or low money, perhaps, but have you ever seen the test of a lot of money? Like, you know, God, I think I wouldn't mind you trying me on that one. Let's see how I do on it. Maybe you'd fail miserably with the test of money. And God in His kindness. The bottom line is all of life is nonstop with tests. It reminds me of the old ad campaign. I remember when I was a kid, it was on commercials. I hadn't seen it on a commercial in a long, long time, but you'll still, from time to time, I'll see it in a magazine, or not too long ago, I was driving through the city of Chicago and I saw up on a billboard back, it would have like a celebrity or some sports personality, and it started with cookies. I mean, we're talking cookies, cookies, and more cookies. I mean, plate full of cookies, mouth full of cookies. And then it had one little two-word question. What was it? Got milk? A mouth full of cookies is screaming. You got milk? Folks, listen, a life full of testing is screaming. Got wisdom? You know, today I want us to look at a passage of Scripture where I think James lays out for us two different ways of living this life. One of them is man's wisdom, the world's wisdom. And then this is contrasted here in this passage with God's wisdom, God's way. And I want us to look at it because I think, and I just want you to know, He gives us kind of a bit of a test for us to take tonight. And I'm just going to kind of pre-warn you, this test isn't put in front of us so that we can all walk out of here patting ourselves on the back. It's just not. It's actually pretty potent and it's pretty convicting because I think the way it's layered, the layered effect of it is that we kind of walk away realizing that there is such a tendency, there is such a bent, it's almost like a default mode towards man's wisdom. And the passage, I hope, and my prayer would be that as we go through this, we just become desperate for God to help us. Folks, I don't know about you, I need wisdom in this life. The tests just keep on rolling. And I need God. So let's look at the passage. He says this, starting in verse number 13. Verse number 13, he asks a question. Please be careful with this question. I'm just going to tell you ahead of time, it's loaded. He said, "Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, and devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion in every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality, without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. So I remember my first introduction to the world of computers was in 1988. My Christian school, we had a donation made for the sole purpose of having some computers for the students to use. And I'll never forget, my principal was so pumped. He was so jazzed as he took us class at a time into this little room that was our computer lab. It was full of these blazing fast machines, MS-DOS. I remember he was just so pumped. We come in these big old huge honking things, and we come in. He had this one all booted up. There was a bunch of boys in our class. We had more boys than we had girls, and he pulled us all around. He had this one all, you know, he probably got in there 30 minutes early to boot it up, so it'd be ready by the time we got there. And he called us all around. He's like, guys, you got to check out this video game. Man, I'll never forget, it was Space Invaders. Remember that one? We're all sitting around going, yeah. 1988. I know that some of you are thinking, ha, you whippersnapper, I remember 1968 technology. Hey, listen, this is my story. 1988 it is, all right? We've come a long way since 1988, right? I mean, a long way since 1988. You know, I was telling you last night that not too long ago we got a new computer. I mean, you can't even compare our, and it's just a couple years ago, but you can't even compare our newer computer to that 1988. I mean, there's just no comparison. We all understand I've got like 1,000 times more flying around in my pocket than that 1988 MS-DOS. I mean, you just can't even compare. If you were going to try to compare, you would compare or put to the test really the operating system. Every computer has an operating system, whether it's today or way back when. I mean, I've gone back and looked at, you know, that old computer that we had, you know, just doing a little comparison to what we have now. But 1988, you know, it had a whopping 486 kilobytes of RAM, you know. Now, you know, 16 gigabytes, that's 486,000 compared to 16 billion. I mean, you can't even compare. It had a whopping 50 megabyte hard drive. You know, now you can get 2 terabytes. I mean, that's kind of like that screen that was so cool with the graphics dealt with a basic 16 colors. Now they literally have tens of millions of colors and shades that they put together to give you that screen that is so vivid you feel like you're right there. You can't compare. But like I said, if you were going to try to compare, you would put to test the operating system. That's the brains of the computer. Every computer has an operating system. And so you could come to our new computer, you could take a busy, complicated, heavy program, application, software, whatever you want to call it, you throw it in there, and I mean just 1,000 miles a second. I mean, it could run it. You take that same program and you take it to that 1988 dinosaur, right? First, you'd have to convert it all over to 3.5-inch floppies. You remember those? And you start sticking it in there, it starts smoking. It couldn't handle the test. They're worlds apart. You know what James does here is he actually shows us two different operating systems of life. And folks, they are worlds apart. One of them is the natural default mode of the human heart. It's man's wisdom. The other one is God's wisdom. And I want us to look at these two today. And first, you know, is it even fair to use this terminology, the world's wisdom? I mean, does the world even have wisdom? Well, I mean, it's biblical terminology. Paul said it, right? What did he say? He talked about the world's wisdom in 1 Corinthians chapter number 1. What does he say? He said, where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the disputer of this world? Hath not God made foolish the wisdom of this world? In other words, the world has an operating system. They have a way in which they do things. The world does have, humanity does have an operating system, but it's faulty. I mean, that's why the psalmist, the Proverbs, what does the Proverbs say? There is a way that seems what? Seems right to a man. There's a way of raising your children that's just going to seem right to a man. There is a way of handling our finances that's just going to seem right to man. There's a way of handling relationships that's just going to seem right to man. There's a way that seems right to man. But the end thereof is the way of what? Death, the Bible says. Destruction. See, man has an operating system. But here's what God says. Isaiah chapter 55. He says, for my thoughts, though. What does he say? My thoughts are not your thoughts. Neither are your ways my ways, saith the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. Folks, we're talking worlds apart. And I want you to know something. As you lived today, with, I'm telling you, a day full of testing, you either operated with man's wisdom or God's wisdom. There's actually not a third option. We live life operating with man's wisdom or with God's wisdom. And I want us to look at it because he really says some hard things here. And I want us just to look at what he says. He says, starting in verse number 13, and I want us to kind of take this as a little bit of a, I think you got to take this first one as a little bit of a loaded question. He says, who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? I mean, how many of you would consider yourself wise out there? I mean, how would you have answered that? What if I'd come in tonight and I put this little piece of paper all throughout the auditorium and, you know, just for you to pick up, had a little question. Would you consider yourself wise? Check the box, yes or no. What would have been your tendency? What would have been the criteria with which you would have decided whether or not you're wise or not? You know, you look back through the day, boy, you know, I didn't do that. That would have been dumb. But I instead chose this. Or last month, you made a good wise decision here. And what would have been your criteria? Maybe we tend to compare ourselves to other people. It's like, oh, compared to him, I'm doing pretty good, you know. What would have been the criteria with which you would have decided, are you wise? He says, how many of you would consider yourself wise and endued with knowledge among you? I just want to say, be careful. Because listen to what he says coming behind it. He says, let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. Can I tell you what that word show means? It means let him show it or let him prove it. Prove it. You consider yourself wise? Great. Awesome. Prove it by the way you live your life. But then here's how you know it's you got to be careful. Look at what he says next, verse 14. But if ye have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, and devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion in every evil work. Now listen to what he says. He says, how many of you would consider yourself wise? Okay, great, prove it. Oh, but wait. If you have any strife or bitter envy in your heart. Now, those words, you can do a word study. You can go through the New Testament. You can look and see the Greek words and then how those words are used in different places. Can I kind of boil it down to you what he basically says there? He basically uses some words that if you're going to sum them up, it'd really be this. If you have any selfishness or self-focus in your heart, stop lying, stop boasting. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, and devilish. He basically brings up the core, most fundamental struggle of the human heart, that we're self-focused. And he says, oh, by the way, if you have any of that going on in your heart, not even in your actions, not in your words, in your heart, can you tell me a single person on the face of this planet who has no selfishness in their heart? He says, how many of you would consider yourself wise? Prove it. Oh, by the way, if you have any selfishness in your heart, stop boasting, stop lying. Actually, that's not wisdom that descendeth from above. It's actually wisdom that descendeth from below, and it's earthly, sensual, and devilish. Folks, these are not even close to being flattering words about me and you. And I hope that tonight you've come to the place where you do understand that there is a tendency of our human hearts towards our own way. I've messed up enough in the midst of life I think my life proves it all the time that there, I better be leery. There is a tendency of the human heart. It's a default mode that's towards my own way. It's towards my own thinking. And so hopefully as believers, we've come to the place where we know in and of ourselves, we're not to be trusted. In and of ourselves, we have still this flesh struggle. And hopefully you've come to the place where you know that you need to be leery of your own way. You know that you need to be desperate for His. But then what does it look like if we're really growing? And I think coming into verse number 17, I think He gives us once again a means by which we can test if we're really walking in God's wisdom, leery of ours, desperate for His in the midst of this life of testing. And He gives us a list. And folks, it's just a convicting list. But this is what it looks like for a person who's walking in God's wisdom, who's living life in God's wisdom. Listen to what it says. Let's look at it together. We'll just kind of work through this list. This is where we'll spend really most of the next few minutes here. Verse number 17 says this, but wisdom that is from above is first pure. And we're just going to work through this list. What does it mean? So if you are operating with God's wisdom, He starts to tell us what it's going to look like in our life. He says the first thing, if you are operating with God's wisdom as your operating system, the first thing He said, it's going to show up in this way. A person who operates with God's wisdom, first of all, is pure. Now, there's a tendency for us when we see the word pure in the Bible, I think there's a tendency for us to think a little bit more on the moral purity, maybe the sexual purity. There's no doubt that that would be included in this, but it's beyond just talking about moral sexual purity. It's really a word for purity, talking about unadulterated, like we would use the word pure gold. When we talk about pure gold, what are we talking about? It's gold that all the dross has been burned away and there's nothing left but just pure, unadulterated gold. And He's talking here about a person who in their devotion, I want you to get this because this is tough for us because we fail. A person who in their devotion to God and His kingdom and His glory, they are pure. They're single. I like that word, and I'll tell you why in just a second. They are single in their devotion. They're not divided in their devotion. And I think that's so good because James uses a word on a couple different occasions that I think is the opposite of what he means here by the word pure. Two different times, James talks about a double-minded man. What does it mean to be double-minded? The word actually, I used to get this wrong. I thought a double-minded man was a man who couldn't make up his mind, you know? The word a double-minded man is actually, the word means a man who is two-souled. Or actually, it's a word that means a man that is split in his devotion, as opposed to single and pure in his devotion. He's actually split in his devotion. Can I tell you something? I personally think that our churches are full of double-minded people. I think I struggle being double-minded. You know what it looks like? It looks like a person who says, well, I mean, yeah, I want a foot in Christianity. I just kind of still want a foot in the world too. Yeah, I want a foot in the church. Yeah, I mean, I want to be all about God's kingdom. It's just, come on, can't I sort of be about my kingdom at the same time? It's a person who, instead of being pure, he's split. Folks, we all struggle being split. We all struggle having things we maybe love. Maybe not bad stuff, but just stuff that if we're not careful, we love too much. Folks, we all struggle in this sense right here. But he says that a person who really has God's wisdom as operating system, he's pure, single in his devotion. Look at the next one. He says that a person who has wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable. What about peaceable? This is a person who's a peacemaker as opposed to a troublemaker. Are you a problem solver in the relationships of your life, or are you a problem causer? Do you stir up trouble in your relationships in life? Or do you bring peace to circumstances and situations in your life? When it comes relationally, are you peaceable? Are you a peacemaker? Do you bring peace to your workplace? Do you bring peace to your home? Do you bring peace to your marriage? When your vehicle is heard pulling into the driveway, do the people on the inside of the house go, "They're home"? Or do the people on the inside of the house go, "They're home"? And if you don't know the answer to that, I bet you could find out. You'd be humble and ask. Do you bring peace in the midst of the relationships of your life? Because if you don't, actually, I think you lack wisdom. Because a person who operates with God's wisdom brings peace. And I'm not talking, obviously, the Bible says that the gospel brings a sword. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about just when it comes to being a peaceable person in our relationships of life. Look at the next one. This is so convicting to me. Folks, these are convicting. Gentle. Okay, so wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle. What does the word gentle mean? It's a word that's talking about your ability to handle other people's weaknesses. How do you do with other people's weaknesses? Do you do okay with other people's weaknesses? Are you gentle with people in the midst of their weaknesses, or do you exploit? Do you make people feel stupid by the way you deal with them? Do you make people feel small? I really think there's two sides of this. On one side, it's the ability to handle people's weaknesses. It's the ability to handle people's, I mean, even their quirks and their idiosyncrasies. I wonder if anybody in here has any quirky people you have to deal with. Don't raise your hand. You know, we just have people who we have to deal with in life that are hard, difficult, prickly. Gentleness comes in there. And then, so it's on one side, the ability to handle people's weaknesses, people's problems, people's quirkiness. On the other side, what about the ability to handle people's sin? I think that really goes along with this word as well, gentleness. I think it goes hand in hand with patience and forbearance. And I mean, I really think it goes hand in hand with words like forgiveness. A gentleness. Are you easy to be sinned against? I mean, I don't know. This may be news to you. Did you know that every single relationship you have is with a sinner? You know what sinners do on a pretty regular basis? Yeah, they sin. It's just a matter of time, men, before she does it again, right? Ladies, just a matter of moments. The question isn't, are people going to sin against you? The question is, are we going to have God's wisdom as our operating system that deals gently with it? This one's so convicting to me. You know, I got four kids, and they're so funny. We've talked about all of our kids as different Winnie the Pooh characters as they've come along. You know, Ella, she's our oldest. She is like in charge. I mean, just type A personality. I mean, we've referred to her as Rabbit, you know, ever since. She is in charge, telling those boys what to do. And then Asher came along. I mean, pretty early on, he's kind of our Eeyore, you know, he's kind of mopey. And if it's going to break, it's probably going to be his toy. And just a little bit on that side of things. Then Liam came. Before Liam even came into this world, when he was still in the belly, we knew who he was because you could watch my wife's tummy and you could tell. I mean, he just, whoa, 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 whoa. It was Tigger. Here he comes, you know. And folks, I mean, he has been bouncy, 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 fun ever since he got here. That's just Liam. And I don't know if you've noticed, we have a trailer over here. We travel in a trailer. I don't know if you knew this, but you know that they're actually on wheels? And you can put those jacks down. But I'm just telling you, it just doesn't matter. It's just always kind of moving. I love to get up early in the morning. You know why I love to get up early in the morning? Because my kids are still asleep. You know what I'm saying? And I get up, and I mean, I go tiptoeing through the house. I don't want to shake them because I want them to stay asleep. And so I get my coffee. I get my Bible. I sit down. I love to get up in the morning and read my Bible. I mean, it's just, I just enjoy it. And I sit there. I'm going to spend some time with Jesus, you know. And folks, can I tell you something? I try to be so quiet because once Tigger gets up, can I tell you something? It's over. You know what I'm saying? It's over. And I mean, without fail, I mean, it's kind of starting to actually change now, but for the longest time, he was the first one up. And I mean, when he'd get up, I mean, here it goes, man, the whole trailer's just wiggling, you know, you just, and I mean, here I am, and I've had so many times where I would I would be irritated with him. Now, I'm not a yeller or anything like that, but I just irritated, a lack of gentleness. I just want to, just trying to spend some time with Jesus. You know what I'm saying? And so many times I've dealt with him in a lack of gentleness because he has the audacity to be a five-year-old. Who does he think he is? You know what? It's actually not because he's sinning against the rules of God's kingdom. It's actually because he's sinning against the rules of my kingdom. And folks, in those moments, God has used my four children to show me. Folks, there is a tendency towards my own way. I need God's wisdom. The testing never ends. Look at the next one. Wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle. Listen to this one. Easy to be entreated. I love this word. It's a Greek word that actually means to be bendable, moldable, or pliable. And I love the way it says it here. It says, easy to be entreated. You'll also find it open to reason, which I'm okay with, but I think it only hits one side of it. I do think there is an openness that a person who has God's wisdom as their operating system, they're open in that you can talk to them. Let me ask it this way. Have you ever been around a hard-headed person? I mean, you just kind of got to stand back in amazement because somehow, some way, apparently, they're like the source of all knowledge. You know what I mean? They're just hard-headed. You can't talk to them. I mean, that's a difficult person to live with. A person who has God's wisdom, they're easy to be entreated. You can talk to them. You can reason with them. They can hear other people. So on one side, this easy to be entreated, this moldable, pliable, it's open to reason. But here's my struggle with that understanding of this word. I think it's not just that you're open to other people's opinions or open to reason. More importantly, even than that, it also means that you're open to truth. That you can hear truth. I mean, maybe I think wisdom can hear another person's opinion, but what if their opinion, I mean, just at the end of the assessment, their opinion's just wrong. There should be an ability to hear them, but at the end of the day, this openness, this easy to be entreated, even at a deeper level, it's, can you be entreated by truth? Can you be molded by truth? In other words, can God talk to you and you can hear it? Have you ever been reading your Bible? Maybe you're just on your daily Bible plan, getting through the Bible in a year plan. And I mean, you're just reading. And have you ever had God just absolutely smote you? How do you handle that? He's going, oh, I'm going to move on to tomorrow's reading. Can God deal with you? What about when pastor's preaching? I mean, when pastor's preaching and he says something, and I just know as a preacher, you're just preaching the word. I mean, God's the one who takes it and convicts the heart. We have no power to convict the heart. But how do you handle it when God uses the preaching of his word and pierces you like a dagger? How do you handle that? You kind of shut down and start looking at your watch. Man, I got to get out of here. Or are you easy to be entreated? Can I dig a little deeper? We're part of you're part of an incredible organism. It's called the body. It's the church. Did you know that the body needs each other? I mean, I think about my body. My body needs the different parts of my body. Did you know that we need each other? Let me ask this. Could a brother, I'm not talking about some stranger. I'm talking about a brother, a part of your body, say something to you, sir? Without you getting defensive? Ladies, could a sister, I'm not talking about a stranger, a sister, a part of your body that God wants to use to help and encourage and build up each other. Ladies, could a sister say something to you without you throwing up a wall of defense? Can we hear? Because if we can't, we lack wisdom. Because when a person operates with God's wisdom, you can talk to them. They're easy to be entreated. Now, am I really getting in trouble here? Hey, men, can your wife say something to you?
Wah, that woman.
According to the Bible, I think she needs wisdom. And maybe the way she says something, for sure, she needs real wisdom and real grace. But sir, please, if she can't say anything to you, you lack wisdom. Did you know that? She's been given as a gift. No, she's not perfect. Folks, if we can't hear from other people, ladies, can your husband say something to you without the silent treatment for the next 3 days? Hey, teenagers, can your parents say something to you? Can we hear truth? Because if we can't, my friend, the book of Proverbs has a word for a person who can't hear truth. It's a fool. Let's look at the next one. Isn't this fun? So convicting. Wisdom from above is first pure, peaceable, gentle, easy to be entreated. These two, I think, go together. It's why there's not a comma between them. Full of mercy and good fruits. I mean, one of them is an attitude, but then it's followed up by an action. And I really think they kind of go together. It's this heart of mercy and compassion for other people. And then there's the good works and the good fruit of doing something about it. A while ago, I asked the question, are you hard-headed? How about this one? This would be, are you hard-hearted? Do you hurt with other people? Because if you don't, you don't have the heart of God. Folks, I love Matthew chapter 9. Jesus, he's going through the villages. He's going through the cities. He's healing the sick. He's preaching the kingdom. I love the way it says it. Just the verbiage of it. It says, and he's healing the sick. And then it says, but when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion. So it's almost like he's healing people. And I mean, you just almost see the scene of him healing one person. Then by the time he helps them, somebody else is already pulling at his shirt. So he turns around, he helps them. And then somebody else is tapping him on the shoulder and he helps them. And it's just like he's so overwhelmed with people so close. But then it says, but when he looked up and he saw the multitude, just as far as he could see, people, more people coming, more people coming. It said, it doesn't say that he's like, oh, great. Aren't you thankful? Instead, it said, when he saw the multitude, he was moved with compassion. And folks, I'm going to tell you something. It is an awesome Greek word. It is a word that means he was moved. It's about like a turning of the stomach. Have you ever seen something that was so, it hurt your heart so bad, it kind of made you a little sick at your stomach? That's the word. That's the idea. That he looked at the multitudes as far as he could see people. And he was moved with compassion. Here's why. Because he saw them as a bunch of sheep who were lost and didn't have a shepherd. Folks, you want to know why you're saved? Can I tell you why you're saved? It's not because we're worthy. And it's not because we're brilliant. And so we came to this awesome decision because we're a little smarter than other people. You want to know why you're saved? It's because that same Jesus had compassion on you as a lost sheep. And now here's what this word, this what he's talking about here. That same compassion, mercy that came to us now goes through us. And we have compassion. We hurt with people who are hurting. I think it starts inside the body. But then I think it reaches outside the body. I think we've got to hurt with people who are hurting. And then it's not just the attitude, it's then the willingness to do something about it. And if we don't hurt with people who are hurting, I think it's because we lack wisdom. We lack God's operating system as our operating system. Let's look at the last two there just real quick. He says, without partiality and without hypocrisy. Partiality is just talking about you deal with people the same. I mean, James had already dealt with it in this book, earlier in the book. He talks about people who, you know, who were coming into the church, and some people were wealthy, and then you had some people who were poor, and there was this tendency to treat the wealthy in one way, but then treat the poor in another way. You know what? If you really have God's wisdom, there's not partiality. We treat people the same, rich or poor. Racial, it doesn't matter. My friend, can I tell you something? If you're a racist in your heart, you don't have God's wisdom. It's without partiality. Then the last one is without hypocrisy. I mean, without any hypocrisy. Would you just stop right there? Who doesn't have any hypocrisy? Convicting is just what it is. You folks don't know me. You don't know the first thing about me. I probably have convinced all of you probably that I'm a little better than I really am. I'm always on my best behavior as I'm standing up here, I promise. How many of you in this room are exactly who everybody else in this room thinks they are? Folks, we all struggle being hypocrites. You know why? It's because there is such a tendency towards this default mode. Because a person who really has God's wisdom, they're without partiality, without any hypocrisy. Folks, I want you to know this list on one side is devastating to me. You know why? Because I fail. I mean, can I just be honest? Folks, I fail at every one of these. I mean, different times, varying degrees, sure. But I struggle. I mean, having God's kingdom, my total focus, nothing of myself. I mean, I struggle being peaceable. I struggle being gentle. I struggle being easy to teach, easy to be entreated. I struggle really having mercy and a heart of compassion all the time and full of good fruits. I struggle not showing partiality. I struggle not being a hypocrite. Folks, this list, I'm telling you, screams at me and you that there is such a tendency in our heart towards our own way. And the layered effect of this text ought to cause us to be leery of our own way in the midst of our life. And desperate for Him. Folks, do you need wisdom? I need wisdom. I'm in the middle of parenting 4 kids. I mean, I'm in the middle of it. I mean, just today, I just found myself just going, God, I need you. I feel like I fail all the time. You know what I'm saying? I need it in the midst of my life. I need it, and I understand. I've blown it enough. I see what the scriptures say is true of my heart. Folks, I prove it all the time that I am broken, and there is a tendency in my heart towards this default mode of man's wisdom. And folks, I need God. And maybe you're sitting here today and you say, Aaron, me too, in the midst of parenting, in the midst of my business, in the midst of our finances, in the midst of these decisions with my parents, in the midst of life, I need it. In the midst of this project at work, in the midst of these people I got to deal with tomorrow, I need it. Folks, tomorrow is full of tests waiting for you. And so maybe you're sitting there and you say, Aaron, I need wisdom. I'm with you. Okay, how do I have it? Can I just tell you 3 things really fast? How is it that we have wisdom? Okay, first of all, and this is so important. Please don't miss this. Are you ready? Wisdom. Are you ready? Wisdom is a person. Wisdom is a person. And wisdom has come to us through this person. I think sometimes when we think about attributes of God, I think sometimes there's a tendency for us to think of these attributes existing outside of God, but then God wants them to be a part of who He is. So He claims them. You know, it's almost like God's like, how am I gonna deal with humanity? Let me look at this, you know, this menu of things that can be true of me. Ooh, love. Oh yeah. Man, I want to be loving, gracious. Let me let grace be a part of who I am. Wisdom, almost as though wisdom exists outside of God. Folks, wisdom doesn't exist outside of God. Wisdom isn't something that He has. Wisdom is who He is. And I want you to know something, that when God came to us as a man, you want to know what's come to us? Wisdom has come to us. You want to know how it is that we have wisdom? It's through Christ. Hear me. If you are here today and you have Christ, I want you to know something. Maybe you don't always act upon it, but you have wisdom. I don't know if this is the best way to say it, but you have wisdom at your disposal. If you are here, though, today, please hear this. If you are here today and you don't have Christ, my friend, I want you to know something. You will never have the wisdom we're talking about. You can't. It's through Christ and Christ only that wisdom comes to us. You must have Christ. Wisdom is a person, and wisdom has come to us through this person. But then how is it that we have it? Because I just said maybe you have it, but you don't act upon it. It's at your disposal. And I still don't know if I like that, but I don't know how else to say it. But wisdom has come to us through Christ. If you have Christ, you have His wisdom. But many times we still, instead of living and acting upon His wisdom, we go back to the default mode of man's wisdom. I do it all the time. So how is it that we live it out? How is it that we act upon it? How is it that it becomes a part of the way we live and think? I got saved 1996, January. Right after I got saved, I was talking about it yesterday. Right after I got saved, I started reading my Bible. I just knew. It made sense to me on one side. I grew up in church, and I just knew it. I didn't even know where to start, but I just knew I was supposed to start reading my Bible. Folks, without anybody really discipling me very well in that matter, I just knew that this is how I was going to get to know who my God was. So I started reading my Bible. I started reading the New Testament in Matthew, just started reading. And then I started reading in the book of Proverbs along with it. I was wanting to read from the New Testament, but then the Old Testament, and I didn't know where to start. I just gotten saved. I was 21 years old, 1996. And I started reading in the book of Proverbs. You know, I knew there was 31 days, you know, chapters, and you could read a day for a month. And so I started reading. I think this was like within a couple days after I got saved. And I read on the second day of me starting reading my Bible, I read Proverbs chapter 2. And I want you to know, I've never forgotten what I read in Proverbs chapter 2. To this day, I've never forgotten it. Let me paraphrase. You ready? He says, "My son, if you will incline your ear to hear it, if you will lift up your voice and cry for it, if you will go searching for it like you're searching for hidden treasure, guess what you'll find? Wisdom." Folks, wisdom is something that has come to us through Christ. But at the same time, wisdom is something that He said, we incline our ear to hear it. We lift up our voice and we cry for it. And we go searching for it like we're searching for hidden treasure. Now, folks, where are you going to go searching and hearing for wisdom? I mean, that sounds pretty intense, like hidden treasure. I mean, where are you going to search? I mean, here I am, and I'm in the middle of parenting. Where am I going to search? You know, online, internet, Wikipedia. Where am I going to search for wisdom? Folks, it's right here. I was somewhere close to this last night, wasn't I? Folks, this book, have you come to the place where you realize this is a non-negotiable, everyday part of the Christian life? This is where we dig. This is where we incline our ear to hear it. And then He said, if you'll lift up your voice and cry for it. In James chapter number 1, I think, is where we find one of the best places where we find that in all of life, there's nonstop testing. Because he says in chapter 1 of James, he says, count it all joy. Find joy in this, brothers. When you fall into diverse temptations, that word temptation is talking about testing. Tests, all different types of tests. He says, count it all joy. When you fall into all different kinds of tests. Here's why. Because the testing of your faith works patience, endurance in us. So that when patience then has its, is complete and has its, then we are perfect and entire, wanting nothing. So in other words, there's a purpose in all this testing you had today and all the testing that's planned for you tomorrow and the rest of the week and the rest of your life. There's a purpose in the testing. God's using this testing to refine us. But in the midst of it, he says, stay under it. Find joy in it because God's changing me in you. But then he says this, verse 5. Ooh, does this apply to us tonight? He says, but in the midst of all this testing, James chapter 1, verse 5, if any of you lack what? Wisdom. Let him what? Ask of God, who gives it to all men. How? He gives it liberally.